This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2, streaming online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Our guest this afternoon, licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us once a month to talk about diet and nutrition. So if you've got questions, give us a call, and Susan will lend you a hand. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free line, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She works with clients of all ages and athletes on enhancing health, fitness, and sports performance. She's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's also the consulting sports dietitian for Illini Athletics and leads nutrition and cooking classes at the new division of campus recreation, ARC Building, on the Champaign-Urbana campus of the University of Illinois. A member of the American Dietetic Association and the American College of Sports Medicine, she's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net and www.rkteamnutrition.net. Again, questions about nutrition, diet and nutrition are invited this afternoon. Those phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Happy May. Good to see you again.
Good to see you too.
And what's new at the ARC? You've got a cooking class coming up?
We do. In fact, tomorrow, if anybody is looking for something to do around the noon hour, we've got a cooking class on the Sonoma diet tomorrow. So Sonoma diet, really looking at kind of the Mediterranean type cooking, mm-hmm. but more of a California cuisine type cooking. And we'll be putting together a recipe, a real nice salad recipe, a California salad recipe, and some of the recipes with the Sonoma diet look at trying to incorporate these good fats, things like the nuts and seeds and olive oil and those kinds of things, as well as getting a whole lot of produce, which we know is healthy. We always talk about how healthy that is and how mm-hmm. good that is. And it's good timing for that with the market just starting.
Just opened on Saturday.
That's right. So I think that a lot of people are looking for new recipes on ways for light eating and ways to incorporate more fruits and vegetables. And so we'll be talking a bit about that. So that's at 12:15. At the Instructional Kitchen, which is in the ARC building, the old IMPE building or Campus Recreation building on campus. You can park right next door there on the west side, and it's free. So if you want to just come in the front and come on downstairs, it's part of the Cookbook Club series that I'm doing with Campus Recreation. So don't know if we'll do it over the summer, but pretty much we'll start again in the fall, the first Tuesday of every month, and have a free cooking demo on a new book, a new cookbook. So it's been a lot of fun doing that. And actually, one of my student interns who's down here, who's a dietetic intern at Rush, Elisa, is going to be here and helping. And she got together a real nice handout on the Sonoma diet, which we can have available for listeners.
Okay, so if folks want to send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, we'll send you this Sonoma diet. What would you call it?
It's a review of the diet and recipes.
Yeah, okay, very good. So send that to us at the Afternoon Magazine, WILL, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Well, tell us a little bit about the Sonoma diet. I don't think I've heard of it before.
Well, Sonoma, as people may know, is a region in California, mm-hmm. And it's certainly well-regarded for its vineyards and wine. We often think about the good wines that come out of there. And the plan itself is a plan that helps with weight loss. So it is, the premise is to help with weight loss and looking at maybe helping curb your food cravings, and that's part of the first part of the plan. And then we also look at, the plan goes through maintaining ideal weight. And really the part that I like about any book like this that's a diet book or cookbook combined is what kind of recipes they have that really would be something that would be feasible to do. So mm-hmm. I can kind of go through what we're gonna look at tomorrow and the types of things. We've got sample, in fact, I'll go through this sample Sonoma diet meal plan just to give an idea of what we're looking at. Things like broccoli pepper frittata for breakfast. Now, a frittata sounds really fancy, but it's, of course, very easy to do. It's just more like a quiche without the crust, so right. it's very healthy. Different types of omelets. And one thing that is really coming to the forefront is trying to help people get more protein earlier in the day. And we've kind of talked about that on shows before. But the idea of really being satisfied when you eat, mm-hmm. and part of that is trying to get a good 20 or 30 grams of protein at a meal when you're eating. Now, not everybody's going to need a full 30 grams, but even adding something like an egg or two, or making an omelet with one egg and four whites and throwing in some asparagus and a little cheese and either making an omelet or making something like a frittata is a great way to start the day. You could add fruit to that or add a little whole grain toast. Different lunch ideas that are in the book, Greek pizza, chicken veggie pita sandwich, black bean soup, which don't know if we'll be eating a lot of soup coming up here now that it feels pretty warm today, actually. But and then snack ideas of trying to mix a protein and a carb. So, for example, baby carrots and celery with hummus. Well, hummus is great. Hummus mm-hmm. is just, of course, chickpeas and some olive oil and a few spices and things. And it's so good for you anyway. And then that might be just a snack people don't think about. But it's actually very filling because you get all that fiber from the veggies and you get some protein in that hummus. And then some of the recipes for dinner ideas do incorporate fish that you would imagine, but also lean pork chops with rosemary, marinated flank steak, and even dessert items that often center around fruit. So one of the goals of this diet is to really bump up some of these fresh, particularly fresh fruits and fresh mm-hmm. vegetables, but don't leave out the protein. So often people think they're going to go on a healthy diet and they either cut out certain meals or they cut out all their meat, and that's really not what this diet is about and not what we promote as dietitians. It's more finding that balance. And hopefully, you know, one good thing about these cooking classes I've been doing is people are saying, wow, I really can make these tasty things that don't take that long. And I really do cut down on my budget, or it really helps the budget mm-hmm. since I'm not eating out maybe as much. Or when I do eat out, I'm really going to enjoy it. But can I make a few more of these fancier yeah. things at home that are not that difficult to do?
Well, also, this sounds like it's really good food and you won't feel deprived and it's sustainable.
Right. Right, exactly. And sometimes, you know, looking at some of the things that we just need to have around, once you have some of these items available, for instance, you have a good olive oil and you have some good spices around, it's amazing all the things you can do with that. And so it's not necessarily just for one recipe. This California chicken salad is what we're actually going to make tomorrow, and it's just a fairly easy recipe, but it does incorporate, of course, a lot of vegetables and some Granny Smith apples and chicken and some walnuts, and so it's quite hearty. By the time you eat that, you feel like
you've had lunch.
Right.
For
right.
sure.
Exactly.
Okay. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move is with us this afternoon. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, if you'd like to join us, if you've got a question, a comment, 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455. One of the things that we said we would talk about this afternoon is eating for energy. And, of course, that should be the reason, one of the top reasons that we eat mm-hmm. anyway, also for enjoyment, of course. But and I believe that we know that if you have a big meal and it's too much mm-hmm. and maybe the choices weren't so good, you don't feel so good
right.
afterwards.
Right, right.
So talk with us a little bit about eating through the day mm-hmm. in order to maintain energy, whether you've got a long day ahead of you, whether you're dealing with very energetic children, mm-hmm. or you've got a big meeting coming up.
Right. Well, there are some simple principles, like you say, that really make sense, but we don't always do them. And so here are a few things that I think are probably most important. Number one is just consider spreading out your food. And so if you took all the food you ate in the entire day and you tried to spread it as thinly as possible upon your day, or if you can mm-hmm. envision that, that's one thing that really helps, because we do know that of course, starting with a good breakfast is important. And no matter what people say, if they don't have time or don't like it, most people, once they start eating a little something in the morning, feel better because they get some energy going. When we think our body hasn't had fuel for 8, 10 hours, maybe even more, that's a lot to ask of the body when we look at all the things mm-hmm. we've got to do in the day. So starting by getting a good meal is important. I kind of look at it as if we're taking 3 meals and at least 2 snacks during the day, and that would be ideal. Now, some people don't feel like they need the snacks, but at least if they're spreading out those meals so they start with a good breakfast, I think that's really, really helpful. And the other thing is we do know that if most people, if they have smaller meals more frequently, they will have more energy coming in during the day, so therefore they can expend more energy, they feel more energetic, and then they kind of have fewer problems with what I might call this overeating zombie syndrome, where we, like you say, we've all felt that way. We ate so much and we just feel like we can't really do anything, can't really think clearly. Often it does affect our blood sugar. Sometimes we feel very tired if we ate too much mm-hmm. at one time. And so spreading this out throughout the day, most people feel just more alert. They have more energy. And there's also a big benefit we know from mixing carbohydrate and protein, and doing that in the morning is critical because we have studies to indicate kids study better, they do better in school if they have some protein in the morning, and not just protein, but add that to your carbohydrate that we normally have. So here's 5 easy options. If you have something like a high fiber cereal, let's say you have shredded mini wheats like I had this morning, have that with skim milk, add some almonds. So you add a little bit more protein, and maybe then you have a glass of juice or grapefruit with it. So that's a pretty simple, easy, very fast breakfast, but it's a good mix. Or maybe something like peanut butter toast and a banana and then a small glass of milk or soy mm-hmm. milk. So you've bumped up your protein. A cup of yogurt, and then add in there maybe a quarter cup of granola and add in some nuts. And you could certainly add fresh fruit to that too. I have a lot of clients I work with who just make their mix in the morning. They have one cup of yogurt, either plain yogurt, and add maybe a little honey or a sweetener. And then add in maybe a couple spoonfuls of granola and maybe a half cup of fresh strawberries and a little bit of nuts. And boy, that's a good hearty bowl, but everything's covered. And so that would be another option. And even something as simple as a turkey and cheese sandwich. I mean, it's fine to have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or a turkey sandwich or something mm-hmm. like that for breakfast. And then another good option would always be a smoothie because that's fast. People say, oh, I don't have time. Then even if they make the smoothies at night before they go to bed and just keep them in the fridge, they could just drink them as liquid in the morning on the way out the door. And what works well with that is adding in just, again, a yogurt. And the yogurt's good because it adds that good bacteria, which we know helps with digestion. Mm-hmm. So maybe you've got a yogurt, you got a cup of fresh berries, and then even throw in there a little bit of orange juice and calcium-fortified orange juice and some ice, and you're good to go. So there's a lot of simple ways that you could make 5-minute breakfasts. So if time is a concern for people, mm-hmm. that needn't be, because you could certainly make something to just take out the door and eat.
Okay, very good. I was reading in the online when we were talking about doing the show and talking a little bit about eating for energy. I read an article that goes back a couple of years where they talked with, this was from the New York Times, and they profiled some folks who you'd think would know this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Athletes.
Yes, right.
And endurance athletes, triathletes.
Yes.
People who run marathons. And they talk about the bonk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so maybe you could talk with us a little bit about the role of carbohydrates and liquids in preventing the bonk. What else could we learn from endurance sports and mm-hmm. endurance training to put into our own lives?
Yeah.
If those of us who I'm not a triathlete.
Well, you know, you're a triathlete of your own sort, because I mean we all need the energy. The difference with endurance athletes mm-hmm. is they are burning so many calories. I had a distance runner I worked with this morning on campus, and the calories that they burn if they're running 50, 60, 70, 80 miles a week is tremendous, because if you think just the idea that around a mile you're going to burn about 100 calories. Now, everybody's different with their body type and size mm-hmm. and everything, but so someone who may train, which this isn't even that many miles for a lot of runners, 50 miles a week, well, that's an extra, you know, we look at the calories, that's an extra 5,000 calories somebody's going to be burning in a week. And you divide that over 7 days, and that's another 700 or 800 calories a day somebody's got to take in, which is a lot of extra calories. And so the bonk that people talk about is when they're training or they're in a race and they just hit the wall. They hit to where they're seems as if they've lost energy. So part of the thing we're looking at with endurance athletes is to, on a daily basis, for them to train. So they train their muscle to store more energy so that when they actually go out and race, they have some more available fuel. So hopefully they prolong hitting that place where they've hit the wall. And part of that is training with the full amount of energy in their muscle every day. And then as soon as workouts are over, we look at this replenishing glycogen or the storage form of carbohydrate as quickly as possible, preferably within 30 minutes, and getting some fuel in quickly, maybe a recovery shake or getting some fuel, and then eating again within an hour or two. And the whole thing is someone can train really well, but if they don't pay attention to nutrition, they're going to have trouble.
Yeah.
Because you've got to do this. But I think the way it plays out to the average person who's active and trying to stay fit and healthy and just have energy is the idea that we don't need those amounts of calories, but we still need it consistently throughout the day.
Yeah, there's a woman that they quoted in the article who is now a registered dietitian, but back in the day when she was running marathons, she said she really didn't keep track of her fluids or energy gels because she said she was, quote, young, dumb, and happy.
Yeah.
But now she knows better. So now she says she has a nutritional game plan.
Right.
And so for every hour of vigorous exercise, she takes in 32 ounces of fluid and roughly 250 calories.
Mm-hmm.
And she says to figure out how much to drink per hour of exercise, you use a scale before and after an hour of a workout. Each pound lost requires 16 ounces of replenishment.
Right.
And we're getting to that time of the year. This is good to talk about, too, because with the warmer weather, that's something to keep an eye on.
Yes. And it's an interesting area with training, and that brings up a really good point from the energy standpoint. I mean, staying hydrated, people really underestimate how that helps us have energy, because of course if we're hydrated, the body's working well, the body's doing what it needs to do. There was a new study that recently came out as well that found that people who were dehydrated, that your metabolism tends to go down a bit when you're dehydrated. So it also may keep your metabolism up, keep you going, give you energy, help you burn calories better if you're hydrated. Not to say that you're going to drink a cup of water and you all of a sudden burn 1,000 calories, but there's something going on that when you're hydrated, your body can utilize fuel better, which makes sense because it helps you burn that fuel. But the other interesting thing that's out right now is there was always a controversy. Ever since I've been a sports dietitian, I think there's been a controversy on how much weight can someone lose in a race or in a sporting event and have it not be a deterrent to your performance. In other words, most runners know that if they run a marathon or they run a half marathon and they lose a pound or two or three, that may be how they run best. In other words, it's to get a little bit dehydrated probably is your advantage because you're carrying a little extra or a little less weight when you run. So we always used to say, make sure you drink enough so you don't lose weight during training. But now the thought is just don't lose more than about 2% of your body weight. So if someone, for example, is 150-pound athlete, 1% of that body weight is 1.5 pounds. So you really wouldn't want to lose more than 3 pounds in a race because that's probably the point where you might start seeing a problem with performance. But many athletes may feel if they lose a little bit, it doesn't hurt them as long as they're drinking the whole time. The challenge is sometimes you can drink this 8 ounces every 15 minutes and you still not be able to maintain your weight because you're sweating so much more than that. There are people now from studies have been known to sweat as much as 12 quarts an hour, if you can believe it. That's kind of hard to imagine, but particularly if you look at somebody with a large body surface area. So let's say a lineman on a football team, 300-pound lineman, and it's hot, and they have all the pads on, and it's in the heat, so they're losing fluid because it's hot and because they're moving and because they have all this clothing on. And those are the type of athletes that we really have to be concerned about because they could be drinking every single break they have, and they would never be able to maintain the weight just because they're losing so much. And those are also the athletes we have to be really careful with, making sure they're also getting sodium. They can't really be replenishing just with water. They've got to use
your electrolytes are an issue.
Mm-hmm. So now we know that most athletes can lose a little bit of weight when they train, but it shouldn't be more than 2% of your initial body weight, which is a good reason to periodically weigh, as this dietitian mentions, before and after hard training sessions or before and after races.
Yeah. The storage form of glucose, what can you tell us about that, and the role of carbohydrates?
Mm-hmm. Well, the storage form of glucose in the muscle is termed glycogen. So there's a lot of interest in what you might hear the term maximizing glycogen, or how can you replenish glycogen more fully. Glycogen primarily stored in the muscle, also in the liver. But we only have, oh gosh, somewhere maybe around 1,000 calories of that, maybe 1,200 calories that's actually stored in the body on a consistent basis. So that's fine for you and me. If we exercise an hour, we're not going to get into those stores. Mm-hmm. We're just not going to burn that many calories. But if somebody's running 3 hours, well, you can bet that they're going to get into burning most of that glycogen. So on a daily basis, again, when athletes train, they try to train in a point where as soon as they're done working out, they get in some carbohydrate with some protein so that they can restore those glycogen stores faster. So mm-hmm. there's some evidence that if you can restore that carbohydrate in the muscle more quickly, then you train your muscle to store a little bit more every day. And so come race day, maybe you store an extra 100 or 200 calories because you've trained your body to do so. In that case, that might help you win the race, or that might help you have a little left before you bonk. So.
Yeah. Well, I was reading also an article that talked about a young woman who was a long-distance runner, and she was really having a rough time, sports injuries, mm-hmm. and just not feeling her best and not running what she thought she could do. Mm-hmm. And what eventually they worked on was for her to put on a little weight before.
Yeah.
So her ideal weight went from 106 to 112.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then she started doing really well.
Yeah.
But she said the hardest thing to overcome was that she thought she should be 106. She thought that she should, you know, that's very important for a lot of women to be,
right.
you know, thin. Mm-hmm. And in her case, it wasn't serving her well at
mm-hmm.
all.
Well, and I think that brings up a good point. With many lean weight athletes, no matter what their sport, there is definitely this fine line of trying to be as lean and fit as you can be. But the challenge with an athlete who is an endurance athlete or a runner is that for every pound you lose, you may be decreasing your body's ability to have a space to store glycogen. And so for her case, mm-hmm. maybe those 5-6 pounds difference allowed her to be more hydrated, allowed her to have a little more space to store more energy in her muscle, and that may have been just what she needed. And also to be in a state, there's real interest right now, particularly with female athletes, looking at this whole issue of what we call energy drain. In other words, we have a lot of athletes who are consistently training and eating maybe 400 or 500, 600 fewer calories every day than they require. And those athletes are much higher risk for having chronic injuries. And even if they're maintaining their body weight where they think it is, it just is not enough.
Yeah. And I think one of the tip-offs in her case was her periods were irregular.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's one of the first signs that it could be a problem. We used to think it was just maybe the hormones were out of balance, or maybe an athlete was just training too hard. And, of course, those things play a role in it, too. But now we know that for many of these female athletes, once we bump their calories up another 300, 400, 500 calories a day, then they're able to do so much more and sometimes menstruate normally as well.
Yeah. Is it also useful to look at the training, days and hours of training? You said earlier talking about looking over the food. You want to spread your food out across the day. Also, would it be useful to examine your training? So that maybe you train instead of 6 days a week, you move back to five.
Right. Often that's what coaches will do, or strength coaches or trainers, athletic trainers, everybody who's working with the athletes, that often helps, maybe dropping a day of training out or having a little more recovery time. When we think about this issue, particularly of glycogen, so the storage form of carbohydrate, ideally you have as much in your muscles as you can handle, and you can see where lean, light athletes they don't have much space anyway because they don't have that much muscle compared to, let's say, a big football player who can store a ton of glycogen because he may have a lot of space. But you see for those athletes why it's so important for them to make sure they're not overtraining. The body takes, most people, it's going to take about 24 hours to replenish the muscle glycogen fully after they've had a very hard training event or a very hard workout. Let's say a two-hour exhausting workout at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. If that athlete eats really well right after and continues to eat on a consistent basis, gets enough calories and fluid, that glycogen can be restored by 4 o'clock the next day. But the problem happens when, particularly with triathletes or someone who's an extremely endurance athlete, they may train it from 4 to 6, and then they may get up the next morning and cycle from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m., and they don't ever have this window of 24 hours where they can completely recover glycogen. And that's where we tend to have more and more trouble unless they have these rest days. And that's why it is so imperative for athletes, even if psychologically they don't feel they need the rest day, their body does need the rest day because it's got to have time to recover. And athletes will often tell me on those off days, they say, gosh, should I not eat very much on those off days because I'm not burning as many calories? I said, boy, you're going to be hungry and you need to eat even more because that's, you got time to eat for one thing. And the second thing is that's your recovery day. So you want your body to have more energy on those days. It's good to eat a little bit more, drink more, rest more, because that's the whole purpose of that day. So an athlete needs to make sure they're not cutting down on those days to compensate for not as much exercise. Yeah.
Well, you know, when you're exercising, afterwards, you know, you feel good, you know, right? And I would imagine that if you're an athlete, to give up a day of that.
Right. Sometimes it's very
natural
difficult.
High.
Right.
Would be tough.
And sometimes there's a lot of guilt involved. An athlete might feel that he or she is not doing something someone else is doing, not training as hard or something. And in reality, we know that most athletes do a lot better if they don't pound the pavement every day, and if they're cross-training or if they're resting on off days, that it's really helpful.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us today. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move, and she works with clients of all ages as well as athletes on enhancing health, fitness, and sports performance. She's a consulting sports dietitian for Illini Athletics, and she leads nutrition and cooking classes at the Division of Campus Recreation ARC building on the Champaign-Urbana campus of the University of Illinois. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. If you've got a question about diet, nutrition, give us a call. 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. We're low on calls today.
We're low on calls, but it's kind of a fun topic to be able to discuss.
It is, to look at. You know, and we just had the marathon a few weeks back, and so it was interesting to think about endurance athletics.
Well, and I think if we get back to this idea about energy, we mentioned hydration. And, of course, with it getting warmer outside, it's something to be reminded of again. And people will often ask, well, how much fluid do I really need to drink? Do I really need to drink as much as 8 glasses a day of water and all these things? And here's, I mean, a good rule of thumb for people to think about is they should be drinking enough fluid so that they should go to the bathroom every 2 or 3 hours and have plenty of urine, and it should be relatively clear. And so that's really the best guideline. The other thing I would consider is knowing that we wake up dehydrated, people should try to drink maybe an extra 20-ounce water bottle or so in the morning just to get another. That's about a little over a pound that you bring back in. 16 ounces is that pound, as we mentioned, of fluid. So that's helpful as well. And then another good rule of thumb is to take your body weight in pounds and divide it in half. And that's a good amount of fluid for most people for the day. So, for example, if someone, again, weighs 150 pounds, that'd be 75 ounces of fluid, not just in water. That would be juice, coffee, tea, milk, anything. So it's really not that hard to get when you count all the other fluids. But it is important to stay hydrated. And many people will stop at the end of the day and say, wow, I only went to the bathroom once today, or maybe twice, or didn't really have to go all day. And so we know it's a problem if you don't have to go to the bathroom. So it is helpful to keep this fluid issue in mind just because our body does run better. And of course, as it gets warmer, the better hydrated we are, the more we can handle body temperature and maintaining a good body temperature.
Let's take a call. A listener on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you talk about the current thinking about eggs, especially egg yolks? And I'll hang up and listen off the air.
Okay.
Sure. Well, I will say that when I was first a registered dietitian 20 years ago, I was a cardiac dietitian in a hospital in Des Moines. And at that time, we really didn't allow eggs. Or if we did, we were very, very careful to say, you know, 1 to 2 eggs per week, something like that. And at that time, it was partly because we thought it was just the cholesterol that raised blood cholesterol. And cholesterol was high in an egg yolk. And now we know it's more than that. It's saturated fat, it's trans fat, it's other things. It's not just the cholesterol we're concerned about. In fact, that probably doesn't have as big a role as saturated fat in raising our own blood cholesterol levels. And so we still have, if someone has high cholesterol, there's still a general rule of thumb to keep your total saturated fat down in the day. But that could even include an egg a day. If someone is not eating fried food, if they're not eating fatty meats, there's no reason you couldn't eat an egg a day, including the yolk, because really we look at the total diet. So it's within the context. Egg is a really great quality protein, complete protein. There's egg in there, or there's protein in the yolk as well as the white. People often think it's just the white, but there's also protein in the yolk as well as the good fats and the vitamin E, and along with the saturated fat and cholesterol. So I would have no trouble if a client had an egg a day, even if they had high cholesterol, as long as they're not getting a lot of other higher sources of saturated fat in their diet, because that's just about 5 grams of fat. That's not very much, even though most of it or a lot of that is saturated fat. And of course, then the egg whites have a lot more protein, but they don't have the fat. Or if you use egg beaters or some type of egg substitute, that's basically just the whites that they've added in some coloring and flavoring. So you don't really get any of the saturated fat or cholesterol if you're using those. So many people opt, if they want eggs every day, they might have an egg one day and the next day they have an egg white omelet, or they use the egg beaters and the next day they have an egg. So maybe they get 3 or 4 regular eggs a day. I think the other thing to think about is other foods that you're eating. Sometimes we'll have baked goods with a lot of eggs in them, as well as butter, and that could be a ton more saturated fat than just one egg. So other areas to look at for this extra saturated fat may be desserts and cookies and crackers and certainly baked goods and those kinds of things, as well as meats and fatty milk and other things we might normally think of. Cheese is a place people tend to get a lot more saturated fat than eggs, for example, because most of us really like cheese. And
sure,
good cheese is creamy, good cheese, or even good hard cheese is fairly high in fat, most of it. And so I'd say take a look at the total diet. And then even if you had an egg a day, if you're eating quite well, then it wouldn't necessarily be contraindicated on a low cholesterol diet.
Okay, very good. Other questions are invited this afternoon for Susan Kundrat. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, in our family, in our extended family, my sister-in-law, her husband, has decided to become a vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And they are now all of a sudden going, okay, we made the decision. Now what do we do to make the transition and to keep everyone in the family healthy? Any ideas for starting such a switch in diet? And this guy is tall and thin, and he burns through calories like nobody's business.
Well, that is one of the main concerns, is calories, right? Because once you cut out animal products, you inevitably are going to cut out a lot of the calories you take in. The two things we think about are calories and protein. Those are probably the two number one things. So, but someone, if they can eat a lot and need those extra calories, like it sounds like he does, then he probably has a lot of room for things like nuts and seeds and nut butters and hummus and olive oil and those kinds of things from a calorie standpoint. So probably, you know, a good rule of thumb, if anybody's going vegetarian, even if they're just saying, well, I'm going to cut out meat, or maybe I'm going to cut out milk products
or cut down,
right, is that make sure that whatever you take out, you put something in its place. And so if he, for example, let's say if the family had chicken breast and pasta and vegetables and that was the main meal, well, he doesn't have the chicken breast, but he may have 2 or 3 veggie burgers, which would then give the same amount of protein as a chicken breast and maybe a little bit more calories even. And so that'd be fine, because he's putting something else in there that would work. Or, for example, with the nuts and seeds, You know, maybe in the morning he doesn't have eggs, but he has a quarter cup of peanut butter he spreads pretty thickly on his bagel. So then there's his protein, and he's getting the calories from the fat, and it's more good fat. And so that's really the rule of thumb. So there's no reason to think that someone who's vegan couldn't do that. The problem occurs if someone, again, say you have this sample meal that's got the chicken breast and the pasta and the broccoli. Oftentimes I'll find students I work with or other clients will just take out the chicken breast and eat the pasta and broccoli. That's a problem because then you've dropped out all that protein. And, of course, then you have to look at things like iron and zinc and some of these other
legumes have got to be a really important thing.
Legumes are wonderful. And it might be, too, as simple as, like I say, the hummus or the veggie burgers that are often made with legumes or instead of just having the rice, maybe he's having beans with his rice. And but the thing I would consider, too, is making sure he's adding enough of this good fat. Even things like having crushed peanuts that you can throw on top of something and pine nuts and almonds that you can add. Because when you cut out the meat, you often cut out some of that fat, so you're going to lose those calories, too. And at the same time, you need to add that protein back in. And so it's not it's actually most people, if they have the time and they have the interest and they have the energy to eat well on a vegan diet, it's a great way to eat. It just takes a little more of those things, takes a little more attention and trying new things. The problems mostly occur when you've got somebody who wants to be vegan and doesn't want to eat beans or doesn't want any soy foods or doesn't want to have one thing or another. You know, there's always been some, you know, question about soy foods with how much would be too much and how much is okay. And we know that probably 3 servings a day for males or females is fine, particularly with the natural soy. So you've got things like edamame and soy milk to use and other things, too, which really help.
Yeah. Let's take some more calls now. Talk with some other listeners. We're going to go next to a caller on line 1, I believe. Good afternoon.
How are you doing? I had a question. I actually had 2 quick questions. One was, when you were talking about athletes needing a day of rest earlier, were you saying that instead of resting, because I didn't hear the beginning of the conversation, were you saying that resting like on the weekend or on the weekend once is not enough, that it should be more rest throughout the week? Or another question I was going to ask is about metabolism. And some people say if you want to lose weight, you should eat like 6 times a day instead of 3 times a day. And so that was my 2 questions.
Okay.
I'll take them off here so I can listen.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Well, the idea about the days of rest kind of depends on 2 things. It depends on what you're doing. You know, many people when they're training, they'll have a strength day, and then the next day they'll do more aerobic work, and the next day they'll do a strength day. And what you're doing is you're resting certain muscles at different times, which allows this replenishment to occur. The other thing is how long you're going. We know, again, that most people train an hour really hard. They're not going to get anywhere near where they're where they're losing so much glycogen, then that's an issue that you need a day of rest. So we're talking about people who are maybe training 2, 3, 4 hours a day or more every day. Those people really, it's really more imperative. Not to say they need 2 days of rest, although some athletes, high-level athletes, do that. They may have just a real easy day one day that's sort of like a rest day, and then they'll train really hard the next day, and that might work well for them. But there's nothing to say you've got to take 2 days of complete rest or anything like that. But what tends to be a bigger problem, again, is if you're exercising in the morning real hard and then you come back and exercise real hard at night. Most of my clients I work with who are doing that are either college athletes where they might train extremely hard in the morning, or let's say swimmers, for example, are notorious for having a 1 or 2 hour training session in the morning, then coming back once or twice again during the day and swimming again, swimming hard, lifting. Those athletes we have to pay special attention to because they're just not getting this. They're not getting rest very much. So that's a bigger concern. But a typical person is training every day. You could exercise every day, but maybe one day it's a long walk, and maybe another day you're swimming, and maybe another day you're weightlifting, and there's nothing to say that an hour or maybe even 2 a day on those days you couldn't replenish your energy and you couldn't be fine from a risk reduction for injury because you're doing different things every day.
Okay, and that's spreading the meals out.
Yeah, spreading the meals. Certainly we do have some data to indicate that if someone's eating the same calories but spreading them out 6 times versus 3, that may help with metabolism. That may help you maintain. Part of it is you may maintain lean body mass better rather than just eating three times a day. Some of this data comes from Dan Bernadeau and his work down at Georgia State with Olympic gymnasts. And he gave them the same calories, but instead of three times a day feeding, they went to six times a day. And by and large, most of the athletes dropped body fat and maintained lean muscle. Body mass better. So you maintain your muscle because you have fuel for it. But the calories did not change. So there's some indication that every time we eat it, it does boost metabolism a teeny bit. The real trick if you're trying to lose weight is that you don't want to make sure you're eating. You want to make sure you're not eating more calories by eating more times a day. You have to make sure you're still keeping the calories even.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener on a cell phone on line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question about supplementing using whey for protein on a vegetarian diet. My normal vegetarian diet does not include enough protein. So is it okay to use whey?
Yeah, whey protein is probably the protein source that's been the best studied for supplementing in a powder form. And so 100% whey protein, the whey protein isolate is probably the whey that has the least amount of lactose, if that bothers people. And that tends to work quite well. And there are some good studies that have come out even the last few years about the benefit of whey protein if you need extra protein for maintaining muscle mass.
That's what I'm looking for. Thank you very, very much.
Mm-hmm.
You're very welcome. We have a couple minutes remaining in this portion of the program. If you've got a question about diet or nutrition, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, we talked about athletes who are really working hard, and they're working beginning of the day and at the end of the day. A lot of us, we got to pick one time
and
do it. And probably for us, us mere mortals, we need it every day.
Right. We need activity every day. And that might be, again, we always talk about building activity into the day and trying to get at least 60 minutes of activity. Maybe that's walking to and from the car. Maybe that's biking to work, all those things. And then hopefully 3 days a week, at least, you're getting a good half an hour, 45 minutes or an hour of cardiovascular exercise, too, where we're working hard. You're actually having to stress your body more. But the 60 minutes a day, every day of just activity is something we all should be doing. Whether or not that includes the exercise, that's a fact that we're moving. And we definitely all need that. But there's no question that what's probably better than that and healthier than that is to just have this worked into your day. I just came back from 4 days in New York City. I did some work out at Columbia. And of course, it was so fun just being in Manhattan and walking everywhere. And I was just watching everybody go from place to place from our hotel, too. And we do, we know we have studies of people who live in big cities and by and large are leaner. They tend to move a lot more because they're just getting out and they're just walking places. And that is a big difference when you look, particularly a place like New York City and particularly Manhattan, where people can get most places they want to go. They can hop on the train for a while or hop on the subway and then get out and walk their extra 10 blocks and building those things into the day is just so critical and so helpful.
Let's take another call, another listener on a cell phone, line 1. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and I just have a quick question. I'm afraid I don't know what a good carbohydrate is. If you could speak to that, and I'll hang up and listen off the air.
Okay, what a great question.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it is confusing. If we think of the best sources of carbohydrate, we're going to be looking at fruits, vegetables, whole grains, which would be something like high fiber grains, preferably whole wheat bread, brown rice, whole wheat pasta, but things like potatoes and sweet potatoes and corn and peas and those types of foods. I mean, those are all going to be high carbohydrate foods that are great options. But you also find carbohydrate in milk and soy and yogurt, a lot of different foods. Those are all probably some of the best, beans and peas and things and legumes. But those are the things we should probably have as our base of the carbohydrates we eat. But we all know we get carbohydrate from soda and candy and desserts and sweets and
Cheetos
ice cream
and potato chips and French fries.
All those things. And so those provide energy just like the other carbs do. It's just that they're not high nutrient carbohydrates. So that's where we kind of say, well, maybe 10% of your carbohydrates that you eat maybe could come from these refined sources or not so healthy carbs, but we want the base to be getting back to the old food guide pyramid or the My Pyramid, mm-hmm. the whole grains, the fruits and vegetables as your base of carbohydrate and your milk products. And that's really what we're looking to do.
And give us again the what I call the pie test. You take your plate and mm-hmm. you look at it. What should be good? How do we divide that plate up so that we've got good carbs and we've got protein?
Mm-hmm. Well, take your plate, and I would encourage people to do this on a paper plate. Take your plate, divide it into quarters, and one quarter should be a protein source. So for the vegan, that might be black beans, for example, or it might be meat, it might be chicken. So you have protein, and then you have hopefully a high-fiber grain. So maybe the grain is a whole wheat pasta or the grain's whole wheat bread for a sandwich, for example. And then you have a fruit, and then you have a vegetable. And we do know that certainly if we can get fresh fruits and vegetables, that's great, but canned and frozen and dried are still okay and are helpful and healthy. And so you've got one quarter protein, one quarter grain, one quarter fruit, one quarter veggie, and then somewhere in there, hopefully there's a calcium source. Maybe there's a little cheese on your pasta, or maybe there's also a glass of milk or, you know, a yogurt or some type of milk product or soy milk product or something for that. And then you know you're balanced. And that's an easy way to kind of be a reminder to think that you're doing mm-hmm. that. And then hopefully your snacks will include some produce. So your snacks will include some baby carrots and hummus or an apple and peanut butter or another way to grab some of that extra produce. That would be great.
Sounds good. Okay. Well, thanks so much, Susan.
Thank you.
Will we see you in June on the first Monday?
I believe we will.
Very good. Okay.
I look forward to it.
Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat, she joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net.